Eric Clapton was Layla. I'm Leela. It's impossible. Everybody mispronounces my name, but L-E-L-A. But thanks, Stephen. That was really interesting. Stephen just spoke about what it was like to navigate within the museum world. And I'm going to talk about what it's like to leave the museum world, not completely, but a little. So in 1983, I felt that I hit the jackpot. I felt that I won the lottery because I got a job in the museum that I thought was the coolest place in the world. It was a Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago. And I had just received my master's. I love Chicago. And they actually hired me there. And I feel like I felt at the time that, you know, this was the most incredible experience. And I worked so hard doing everything I could possibly do. Sort of what Stephen just said, whatever they needed. Do they need someone to call on the phone trying to raise money? I'll do it. Do they need somebody to cater an event? I'll do it. What is needed? I was willing to work 24/7, and I was young, and I had a lot of energy. By 1985, I was hired as the registrar, which is unusual. That sort of movement doesn't usually happen so fast. Usually it's a 5 or 10 year period now, for sure, that you have to be a registrar. But back then, it wasn't like that. So I just felt the whole time I was, most of the time I was there, that I was happy and everything was fantastic. And I loved it. I really did love it. And because we were little and we were growing, when I started, you know, we really did have carbon copy, like literally the carbon and the copy. Some of you, Irene, you remember that? And, you know, the registrar before me, we were doing an international show, she would send a telegram to Europe, and I came up, oh, we have this new thing that I just learned from the shippers. It's called a telex. And I got the director to buy a fax machine. So all of this stuff, and I learned it through my peers. It was really my peers and the shippers who trained me. Now I'm a teacher at the School of the Art Institute in Chicago in the graduate departments of arts administration, and we train people now. But in the early 80s, there was no training. You learned while you were there. But the wonderful thing was everybody wanted to help you. How do I figure out dimensional weight? How do you get computerized? Where do you find such and such? You just call any registrar or any shipper, and they were fantastic. So the other thing to emphasize what Stephen said was I also, while I was there, tried to do as much as I could. So I was, I did read the GOS grant for the IMLS. I was a map reviewer, which was very helpful when I later went into consulting. I try to be involved in the Registrar's Committee, in the Museum Midwest, all the things that you all are doing now. And each step, each thing you do gives you skills that are transferable if you choose to leave what you're doing. As things started to, you know, reality sets in and you realize you haven't really won the lottery, and, you know, you start to get tired a little. Something would happen at the museum, like we had a new building in 1996. And other things happened in my life, you know, marriage, family, all of that. So by the time in the 2000s, I wasn't quite as excited, and I wasn't working harder than everybody else then. And I would note when I would call some people in other museums, they were grumpy. And I didn't want to be that grumpy person. I can be grumpy, but I didn't want to be that grumpy person. So I felt like, you know what, I've been here 20 years. I can do something different. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what to do, but I just figured, why not? So I thought it would be cool because it was 20 years, almost exactly. And Jim Wood, he was the director of the Art Institute, had just left, and he said the same thing. I think I have another career in front of me. So I resigned in 2003, and I started up Museum and Fine Arts Consulting. I didn't know much about consulting. I mean, I had been to Museum Management Institute in 1991. I had done some surveys, but I really wasn't that knowledgeable. I had taught at the School of the Art Institute in the late 90s, I believe. So I had a little bit, but not enough. So what did I do? Well, I went to the library, I researched, I got a lawyer, I became an LLC. I figured, why LLC? Why not incorporated? You know, we figured out all those things, and I built a business. And it was really because I couldn't any longer just call up somebody and say, hey, how do you do this? Because you all would know, and if you did, you're busy talking to each other museum. I mean, and there wasn't, in the consulting world, there was no mentor, really, because people in that area really didn't want to share. They just saw me coming in as competition. So I had to figure it out on my own. So I have a company, and just to think of, well, what do I want to call it? Well, I want museum in it, because I want to work with museums, and it doesn't have to be art museums, it can be any museums, but I do want people to know that it's also fine arts, so that's how I came up with Museum and Fine Arts Consulting. And then you have people, right, when you go back into, you know, the museum or back into the milieu where you've just left, and they go, oh, Leela, how are you? I hear that you're, I can't remember the word, you're freelancing. And I always was insulted about that because, no, I'm not freelancing. I have a great big company. I mean, it's just me, but I didn't tell them that. But, you know, it was sort of a thing where when you go into some people, you always think when somebody leaves a big job and they go into another job, they're consulting, meaning they've left wanting to or not wanting to, and they're just looking for the other job. But a real consultant, somebody who's committed to consulting, that is the end game right there. So anyway, I really did write a business plan. And when I know a lot of people say, well, I wrote my business plan on a piece of paper like that, and some people don't. But everybody's different. For me, I left a very big job with a very big salary. I had two young children that were going to be in college someday. I had a big house. I had to bring in the money. I couldn't just, you know, well, let's see how much I make. So I really did, and it's not, you know, it's not rocket science to make a business plan. What are you going to do? Where do you need to be? And what do you need to do to get there? So it's actually building a budget, because I had paid attention to those financials, especially the MMI. Well, how much am I going to charge? You know, what are other people in the area charging? What are my expenses? How much can I really charge per year? And how much do, well, we know that I would lose money the first year, but what would be the increments? And what do I have to do every day? Part of my plan, how many people were I going to see? How many people are going to go to lunch? What boards were, I'm going to get on three boards by this date. I'm going to get on, you know, go to two conferences by this date. I'm going to go to events twice a week. I can almost get a job every time I go to an event. It's amazing. You cannot get a job when you're sitting in your desk. You have to go out there. You have to talk to people, and you have to tell them what you do. So then I had to come up with my elevator speech, right? I teach that, and I certainly can't teach something I don't do, but I had to write it down in case I forgot. But I usually do memorize this. So when people ask me what I do, I say I take care of, appraise, bill, research art collections, assess organization management structures, and I'm a teacher, so I make it easy. So in that elevator speech, I talk about all the things that I do. So what do I do? Well, I do collection management, right? Because that's what I started. I started as a registrar. I took care of a collection. I'm a professional appraiser. Now, I was always involved in appraisal work, and I wrote an article with Ildi DeAngelis in the 90s about museum and valuation. But I really didn't understand valuation theory. And I always, when I was in a museum, I always wondered, or it wasn't a wonder, I always thought, who would want to be an appraiser? I mean, it's not, you know, this is when the 82-83 forms came out and the appraisers are getting in all this trouble. But it's actually an amazing field. And so I gave a lot of work away that first year. And so I thought, I think I'll get accredited. Well, it's not so easy to get accredited. You have to take all these valuation courses. There are, you know, three well-known appraisal societies. There are American Society of Appraisers, and that's what I am. I'm an ASA. There's an International Society of Appraisers, and there's an association of AAA. I can't remember what it stands for. So it includes taking at least 4 core courses. You have to take USPAP, which is a Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, and they expect you to come already having your knowledge base and your content base. So what's wonderful about that is that I can always pick up $500 or $1,000 here or there. Everybody needs an appraisal, and even during the really bad years, 2009, 2010, when we thought, oh my God, you know, because my husband said, you know, I said, what if I leave the museum and I'm a failure and I, you know, can't make any money? He goes, well, you'll go back. Well, in 2009, there was nowhere to go back. I mean, you had to sink or swim. So because I had the appraisal, because I had taken that up, everybody needs appraisal. Maybe not the collectors, but certainly the insurance companies and so forth. And then I started art advising. So I also help people build collections, and I buy things for them. We set it up in their homes. You know, I don't work at the very high end because it's too many headaches. But I work, you know, at a mid-level, you know, usually with someone with $20,000 or $50,000 a work or something. So maybe you think that's high level, but, you know, think of the commission. It's not that much. But what I make sure I don't do is confuse my appraisal work with my art advising work, because appraisers have to be arm's length. So when I do one, I don't do the other. And then I went back and started teaching at the School of the Art Institute. And I just love that, because I feel like my students keep me young. They teach me so much, even more, I think, than I teach them, because the younger generation has all these things that's happening electronically that I just have. Even today when I was sitting there, I was having the young woman next to me show me how to tweet. I was like, I thought he was going to tell us how to do it. And he said, he did. So it's good to have, and be around young people. And I teach 2 classes, arts consulting, which I made up, and the art object valuation and authentication. And talking about making it up, that's exactly what I've always done. So if it's not there, just make it up. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to have a certain background. So back, for instance, in, you know, the 90s or the 80s, we were one of the first museums organizing commissions for artists. So there was no agreement, so I wrote an artist commission contract, and that got sent around. I presented it at Aliaba one year. So it was just a case of, okay, well, let's just figure it out and do it. If you start, you know, if you look at something and figure out what you need and you ask questions, these things aren't hard to do. So the art object valuation and authentication is just such a fun class, and a lot of the students get interested in research. A lot of them get interested in appraising. So, and it's an unusual course that I made up. And the other thing I did was I just love, and this is a part I love about appraising, the research. And I know that all of you all love this part too. I love on a cold day to be stuck in the Ryerson. I love being involved in books. I love finding a discovery. And so one of the things that when I was working, I had a forgery I was dealing with. So I just so happened to start working with forgeries, and I just so happened to get another forgery. And I just so and so all of a sudden now I'm speaking everywhere about forgeries. I didn't try to do that, but everything that I do makes sense in terms of transferring that skill. And I am actually speaking on forgeries on Sunday, I think. Sunday. Thank you. And then the final thing, part of research, is provenance research. Now, I don't consider myself a provenance researcher. I think you have to speak German to do that. But I do work with a provenance researcher, and I was very involved in the doing research on the Gerlach the Art Trove and was hired by the task force and did a lot of the early research on the Matisse and the Lieberman, both of which were just given back to the families and the heirs in March. So that's been a really fun thing. But all of these things really, you know, one thing went into another, and it really wasn't anything that I specifically went out to do. When I went to start out, I didn't think, well, I'm going to do research. But when you get a project, you know, something else turns up. And there were things also that turned up that I found wasn't good for me. So somebody, I think I toured the Whitney Museum trustees through a collector's house in Chicago, and they asked me to, or maybe it was some, it could have been some museum in the West, I don't remember, but they asked me to organize a tour, and so I had to call all the collectors I know and ask if we can come over to their house and make budgets, and I thought, no, I don't like that. So there are things that come up that doesn't have your skill set. I don't like rejection, so I'm not good with rejection. So if, you know, collector said, no, I don't like that. Oh, don't say no. So, you know, you have to figure out. Some people, you know, when they do these cold calls, they don't mind. You know, if you say 20 no's, you're going to get the 21st a yes. So each of you, you know, if you're thinking about, certainly if you're young, if you're thinking about more flexibility in your life, I was able to have a lot of flexibility in really key years with my kids that I just love. Now I'm an empty nester, and so it doesn't really matter anymore. Not that it's all wonderful either, you know. I was just saying last night to a couple of my friends, oh yeah, you guys probably don't work on the weekends, so when it's a consultant, you know, you work all the time. So, I mean, every once in a while you can say I'm out of town for 2 weeks and try not, but when you have a client and they're a good client, you want to make them happy and you want them to think that they're your only client. So it's been a really fun ride. I'm so delighted to still be connected with this group and ARCS. How you have both collection managers and museum registrars is fantastic. And we're going to now sit here, I think, and answer your questions. And that's it.